Okay, Tracy, out with your felicitation.
Happy International Mother Day.
Well, that's nice. Not right, but nice. Take two.
Happy International Mother Language Day.
Aha! Say what? I'm Patrick Cox, and this is The World in Words, number 42. Thanks to this podcast, International Mother Language Day has not passed you by this year. And before it's too late, let us also mark the International Year of Languages. Also on today's podcast, we go a little bit Welsh, we hang out with Brazilians who want to learn English, and we hear the story of one very famous Jamaican song.
As a free man, I take pride in the word, Ich bin ein Violiner.
Why, as an American, do I have to push a button to speak English?
It's embarrassing when Europeans come over here, they all speak English, and then we go over to Europe, and all we can say is, merci beaucoup.
Yerkshamash. Happy Borat's Mother Language Day. I don't know what that means either. The World is co-produced by the BBC World Service, Public Radio International, and WGBH in Boston. The Big Show is broadcast on more than 250 public radio stations around the United States. Listen online at theworld.org. That's also where you can check out all of our other podcasts. So today, we begin by considering a macro effort by the United Nations to promote languages, especially smaller ones. Then we zoom in, take a closer look at one language that's doing okay, despite predictions that it might vanish. Then a report from the front lines of English language learning. In this case, it's Brazilians in New England. And finally, One Love, the song and the story behind the song. I can't believe I just said that VH1 style. In any case, this is a very nice piece of Jamaican cultural history. First off, the United Nations and language. February 21st is International Mother Language Day, as proclaimed by UNESCO, the educational and cultural arm of the United Nations. There's interesting and violent historical roots to International Mother Language Day. This is what happened on February 21st, 1952. In what is now Bangladesh, but was then East Pakistan. Pakistani police fired upon students who were campaigning for the recognition of Bengali as one of the state languages of Pakistan. Several students were killed. Bengali is, of course, now the national language of what has become Bangladesh, which leads to the International Year of Languages. This has been a year-long celebration, I guess you'd say, that ends on International Mother Language Day. The goals of the International Year of Languages have been a bit fuzzy, which is often the case with these resolutions and declarations that come out of the United Nations. They're somewhat compromised by tensions within the UN. In this case, it's linguistic tensions. That said, stuff has been happening. It's probably best to view the International Year of Languages as part of a movement that began in the early 90s and that's been trying to highlight ever since then the crisis of disappearing languages. I spoke with Don Osborne about this. He's director of Bisharat, a Washington-based organization that's using technology to improve local language use in West Africa. He's also an unofficial coordinator of the International Year of Languages. The first thing I asked Don was about the fact that the International Year of Languages actually has to share this past year with a bunch of other UN-declared years, as in the International Year of Planet Earth, the International Year of the Reef, the International Year of the Potato. So here's what Don Osborne said about those other declarations.
A lot of those initiatives had some pretty significant NGO or corporate backing to put up big websites and some publicity efforts. And languages didn't have that. So my original idea with the website, try to gather some information that could eventually go into International Year of Languages independent website. Now, that didn't happen, but in the meantime, I did manage to gather some information. It was a chance to kind of make up for missed opportunities in the past and to see what comes of it.
Right. There does seem to be a sense among a lot of linguists that there have been a lot of missed opportunities and that it is very difficult to get the word out, whether it's through the United Nations or anyone else. You know, and the UN declaration itself made that a little bit difficult insofar as most of it was strangely inward-looking. You know, it was concerned with linguistic diversity within the UN, which is not something that the likes of you or I can do much about.
That's right. It was kind of a strange document in that sense, but apparently some states are concerned that their languages, while official UN languages, are somewhat less than equal with English, which is taking a predominant role in a lot of spheres internationally. But there were at least three clauses in the overall resolution which had more general relevance to the kind of language issues that concern a lot of people outside of the UN that will open the gateway to talking a lot about linguistic diversity and a lot of things.
Right, and multilingualism.
Yeah. The way I see the year having taken shape, there's linguistic diversity and multilingualism is a very big thrust. And what's interesting is a lot of people are talking about developing languages, in some cases revitalizing languages. Other people are focusing a lot on language learning, which is kind of a complementary thing. A lot of people are talking about, oh, these are opportunities just to say, well, learn a new language. So it's kind of interesting. These two aspects have profited from the year. And then the various universities and organizations and countries, a lot of stuff around the world has happened that we don't really hear about. And it seems like there's a lot of things going on in different places where people are saying, hey, this is the International Year of Languages. Let's have a seminar or let's have a little festival or what have you in different places.
Well, the British linguist David Crystal, he'd suggested, I think before this year began, a bunch of ways to bring this field into greater public consciousness. Things like awards and museums and days of celebration, artwork, those kinds of things. I mean, you've said that you've seen some evidence of that taking place locally. What about globally?
Well, that's the big thing. The language diversity is local. Identification with the cause can be global, but it's a little more abstract. It's easier for somebody, say, in Wales to talk about Welsh than to get together and talk about how you promoted those or what have you. It's another level.
That's Don Osborne. He's been an unofficial organizer, mainly online, of the International Year of Languages. Don just mentioned Welsh, and Welsh is one of very few minority languages that's bucking the trend. Basically, Welsh is undergoing a revival to the point that about 100,000 more people speak it today than did in the early 90s. All told, about 600,000 people speak Welsh today. I'm going to play a clip from an interview I did with Peter Austin. The full interview is in The World in Words number 23. Peter Austin tracks the progress of all kinds of endangered languages. Here he is on why he thinks Welsh is succeeding.
More or less everybody in Wales these days is bilingual because even children who are in Welsh immersion schools are still learning English. So the two languages are, you know, co-equally being developed. It wasn't just the government that was involved in this. It was a huge commitment from the Welsh-speaking community themselves. And, you know, a government can tell people, well, you should speak this language, and they can repeatedly say it, but it won't be successful unless the community says, there is a reason to want to do this. You know, there are reasons in terms of our identity to preserve our culture and our language and the stories and the history and the songs. I mean, particularly in the case of Welsh, you have the incredibly rich literature and songs and so on that, you know, that was what people wanted to carry forward.
That's the very fine Welsh singer Ceris Matthews. So, the regional government of Wales, which is called the Welsh Assembly, this month published new plans to promote the Welsh language. They'd require some private companies in Wales to adopt Welsh language policies. So in some parts of Wales, Welsh would be as commonly used and accepted as English. We have a story coming up on this from the BBC's Wales correspondent, Wira Davis. A couple of Briticisms in this report that I should warn you about. The word surgery here means doctor's office. In this case, it's a primary care physician, not a surgeon at all. Also, there's an executive from a bank who mentions cash point transactions. What he really means are ATM transactions, trust me. One more, the report mentions Westminster MPs having oversight over the Welsh Assembly. Westminster MPs here refer to the members of the British Parliament, which passes laws relating to Wales. Phew, forget about Welsh. I'm translating English here. Okay, here's the story.
Welcome to Wales, Croeso I Gymru. The very first thing that many people see as they cross the Severn Bridge into what is an increasingly bilingual country.
That, of course, means much more than a few bilingual road signs. About 20% of people here speak Welsh, and these plans from the Assembly government would put Welsh and English on an equal legal footing across public and some private services.
Hello, Shufian.
Hello.
At this surgery near Swansea, Dr. Myer Williams already treats patients in English or in Welsh, in whichever language they feel more comfortable. Anne Tower-Jones is a patient here.
I'm at ease.
with my doctor, who speaks Welsh, and therefore I feel that I can be more relaxed in a sense, that I can explain myself and my illnesses far better.
Do you think it's a right that you and every Welsh speaker should have?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
They're not currently required to do so, but some big private firms like banks offer Welsh language banking, mortgages and other bilingual services. Alan Jarman is the chief executive of HSBC in Wales. Although such services aren't really cost-effective, he thinks it gives the bank a competitive advantage.
We have about 5% of our cash point transactions conducted in Welsh, and we handle about 40,000 telephone calls a year in Welsh. And those enable us to demonstrate to our customers that we are there to do business in the language that they choose. And from our point of view, it enables us to very positively place ourselves right at the very heart of the Welsh business community.
Y tren sy'n nesau at platform 3A yw gwasanaeth 7 munud wedi 10 o'r gloch, First Great Western, or Taunton.
At train stations across Wales, it's a similar message.
The train now approaching platform 3A is...
Indeed, in the private sector, only a few larger companies will be required to do more in the Welsh language. Private firms that provide public services, like railway, electricity and phone companies. There will also be a greater legal obligation for public bodies like local councils across Wales.
Ydy'r prif rif yn i dog arweinydd Plaid Cymru.
Gai na hefyd y tegu'r sylwadau sydd wedi cael ei wneud gan
y Party of Wales. May I also endorse the comments that have been made by the First Minister?
Translation and transcription services cost lots of money, like here at the National Assembly. Westminster MPs will now scrutinise the Assembly government's proposals, as the Assembly itself doesn't have its own lawmaking powers. Many, including David Davis, the Conservative MP for Monmouth, are strongly opposed to the plans.
At a time when so many jobs are being lost, the last thing we want to do is to send out a message to private companies thinking of investing or setting up in Wales, that if they do so, that they will face the costs of Welsh language legislation, which they wouldn't face in England. That would be absolutely disastrous.
For decades, language campaigners have demanded more legal recognition for Welsh. These proposals go further than ever before, but not far enough for some.
The BBC's Wira Davis. Now, in future podcasts, I'm going to keep coming back to Welsh. This may seem a little obsessive, okay, it is, but I'm really interested in tracking a minority language that's making a comeback, a language that a generation or two ago, a lot of people thought would go extinct. Inevitability reversed. Let's stay with Welsh for this week's Eating Sideways. This is a segment where we consider a foreign word or a phrase that's difficult to translate into English. For an explanation of why I've called it Eating Sideways, check out The World in Words number 31. So this week's word is whil. H-W-Y-L. Now, this word turns up in a lot of British English dictionaries, which I guess is testimony to the fact of its untranslatability. The MSN Encarta Dictionary defines it as good spirit or enthusiasm. That's really the tip of the iceberg. It conveys a certain passion and ecstasy, especially when describing a preacher or somebody like that. And over time, whil has come to stand for a sort of Welsh national disposition. So it is, for many people, Welshness, whil. Now, from the Welsh valleys to Massachusetts and the town of Framingham, there's a big Brazilian community there. And many of them are clamoring to learn English at Framingham's free language classes. And the current slump in the economy appears to be playing a role here. The fewer jobs there are, the more people want to learn English. And there's a lottery system to pick the students. Here's reporter Eduardo de Oliveira.
It's a freezing winter night in Framingham. 600 immigrants are jammed into the cafeteria at a local middle school. Many wear heavy coats, some came direct from work and are still wearing their uniforms. While kids run around the cafeteria tables, their parents fill out forms to enter the lottery. All are here to try to get entry into the free English as a second language classes being offered. But the majority will go home disappointed.
We want to say, first of all, we are sorry. We will not have enough space for everyone who is here. This lottery is the fairest way for us to get people into class.
Christine Tiber runs the ESL program. She's been with it since it started 25 years ago. The classes used to be filled on a first-come, first-served basis. Tiber started the lottery in 2002 when she noticed prospective students were sleeping on the sidewalk outside the school the night before enrollment day. This evening, her instructions are being translated into 5 languages. Most of the people entering this lottery speak Portuguese.
Antes de mais nada, pedimos desculpa por não ter um lugar para cada de vocês.
Framingham has been a destination for immigrants as far back as the 19th century. But in the past 10 years, it's become a magnet for Brazilians. Today, a third of the town's 67,000 residents are from Brazil. Luciane Campos is one of them. She sits at a cafeteria table filling out a form for the ESL lottery. Luciane is in her 40s and migrated from Brazil 3 years ago, but she speaks no English. She relies on pickup work like babysitting. She realized she needs to learn English in order to get anywhere.
Aqui é importante porque sem inglês a gente não resolve nada, né?
Luciane says, if you don't speak the language, you can't do a lot of things. It's hard to communicate and work. When you know a language, you have more opportunities in life. English is the universal language. Tonight, Karen Masala is one of the lucky ones. She's a Brazilian immigrant who actually won the lottery in 2 previous years. But both times she had to drop out because of a hectic work schedule. Now, with the economy in such bad shape, Karen is working less, so she thinks she'll be able to stick with the classes this time. Karen says she's embarrassed that she doesn't speak English.
Eu fui parada pela polícia recentemente, entendeu? E eu tenho certeza que me atrapalhou pouco eu não saber.
The police stopped me recently because one of the lights on my car wasn't working. I couldn't understand enough of what the cop said. I felt a little bit humiliated.
Luciane Campos hears her name announced in the lottery.
Estou muito feliz, sabe? Já estava perdendo as minhas esperanças agora.
Luciane says she's happy because she was beginning to lose hope. Some Brazilian immigrants have already lost hope. The Brazilian Immigrant Center in Boston estimates that in the past 2 years, more than 15,000 Brazilians have left Massachusetts and moved back home. Most of the Brazilian immigrants who remain are without legal status. They have no job security and no benefits. So learning English and adding that to their skill set is even more critical. In fact, more Brazilians showed up for this year's lottery than last year's, which means there may be a silver lining to this bad economy after all. As one Brazilian told me, some people used to work 2 jobs. Now they're only working 1, so they may have more time to study English. For the world, I'm Eduardo de Oliveira, Framingham, Massachusetts.
So much for the argument that immigrants don't want to learn English. That report, by the way, came to us from Feet in Two Worlds, which brings the work of immigrant journalists to public radio. It's a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. Now this, briefly.
Sorry, Alex, excuse me. What are you doing?
I'm just trying to reach one of the people we interviewed last week. It was a great interview, and I want to put it on the Best Of podcast, so I thought I'd talk to them again.
But we already have that tape, because we aired it last week.
Miracle worker.
The World's Best Of podcast. Find out more at theworld.org/podcasts.
Okay, this month, Bob Marley, were he still alive, would have turned 64, which got the big show's Marco Werman thinking about Bob Marley's legacy in Jamaica. Yes, it's Marco again. He's been slumming it a lot of late on this little old podcast. Anyway, here's Marco with the latest installment of our occasional series on unofficial national anthems.
One love. One love. One heart. Let's get together and feel our right.
It was last year when I was reporting in Jamaica that I noticed how Bob Marley's song One Love seemed to show up everywhere, like here at the Alpha Boys School in Kingston, an orphanage where the music director uses a song in band practice.
Well, let's try it from the top now. Drummy, your time. Don't that feel better?
One Love does make you feel better. That's probably why the Jamaican government adopted it to sell their country as a tourist destination.
Hey, Jamaica, sing One Love. See Jamaica smiling.
One Love.
Oh, no.
Let's get together and feel all right.
You got to come to
call your travel agent.
Crass commercialism, yes, but a definite improvement over a previous campaign by Jamaica's tourism ministry. This schlocky 1978 spot riffed on John Lennon's Merry Christmas, War Is Over.
Come back to Jamaica.
Come back to gentility.
What's old is what's new.
Come back to our beauty.
Back to One Love, though.
It is rather odd that One Love is being used in a commercial way, particularly by places like the Ministry of Tourism, because Bob said at various times in his life that every government on the face of the earth is illegal. Every law is illegal. Only Jah law is to be practiced.
Roger Steffens is a Bob Marley biographer and manages the world's largest Bob Marley archive.
There are some factions in Jamaica among the hoteliers that resent the fact that Bob Marley's song is being used to try to fill their hotels because they think that to this day the reggae rhythms are going to attract the wrong kind of people to Jamaica. So there is a built-in irony there.
There's another irony with One Love, a big irony. Bob Marley wrote and recorded One Love in 1966 with his band at the time, the Wailing Wailers. It became an instant hit, but Marley wrote it when he was making the transition from Christianity to Rastafarianism. Listen to the words.
There is one question I'd really like to ask.
One soul.
Is there a place for the old blessed sinner who has earned all mankind just to save the soul?
You find lines like, is there a place for the hopeless sinner who has hurt all mankind just to save his own? That's biblical stuff, says Roger Steffens.
Christianity was so much a part of the day-to-day life in Jamaica during its years as a British colony. The Church of England was very important, and so was the Presbyterian Church, because a lot of the slave masters were Scotsmen.
Bob Marley's own father, Norval Sinclair Marley, a Marine officer, was a white Jamaican of Scottish descent. Bob hardly ever knew him because the father was always at sea, and he died when Bob was 10. But the religion rubbed off, and Bob Marley's mother, Sidella Booker, also took religion quite seriously.
Bob Marley was a Christian early on due to the influence of his mother in the little town in northern Jamaica called Nine Mile, where he was born, and he would sing in church with her and sing out in the fields. And, of course, Rastafari, the faith that he professed, had a lot of Christian elements, and a lot of the music from the Christian church was adapted into Rastafarian chants.
Let's go together to Bob this holy man. When the man comes, there will be no need to man.
The second verse of Marley's 1966 ska version of One Love goes, let's get together to fight this holy battle, so when the man comes, there will be no doom. Well, after he made fully the transition to Rastafarianism, Marley would change Holy Battle to Holy Armageddon, in fitting with the Rasta idea that Armageddon is the state the world is currently in. Whether or not the reggae-loving world understands, that's beside the point. Roger Steffens says One Love has transcended any claim Rastas may have put on it.
For example, the national holiday in New Zealand is February 6th. It's called Treaty Day, and it commemorates a treaty signed, I think, in 1840 between the Maori people and the British colonizers. And to this day now, they don't really celebrate Treaty Day. They call it Uncle Bob Day. And the radio stations play Bob Marley music all day long, and they have festivals honoring Bob Marley on February 6th. First Nation peoples, Aboriginal people, Maori people, the Havasupai who live in the bottom of the Grand Canyon, all of those people regard Bob Marley as one of their own. And One Love is the finest example, I think, of Bob's tapping into a universal theme.
For Jamaicans, though, both Rastas and the majority non-Rastas there, One Love is an anthem that occupies as much space in your mind as the official national anthem.
Justice to be all forever, Jamaica land we love. Ta-na-na-ta-na-ta-na, Jamaica, boom. Jamaica, boom. Jamaica land we love. Bob Marley's song now. One love, one heart, let's get together and feel all right.
Thank you, Bob Marley, for a great song. Also, thank you, reporter Madeline Baer, who assisted Marco Werman on that story. And, of course, thank you, Marco. Marco's Frontline World TV documentary, by the way, on how Bob Marley's legacy lives on at the Alpha Boys School in Kingston, Jamaica, is now online. I'll post links at the World in Words Facebook page and at patrickcox.wordpress.com. Write me in Facebook or email me. That address is language@pri.org. And see you next week.
Let's get together and feel all right.
As it was in the beginning,
one love,
so shall it be in the end.
One heart,
all right.
Give thanks and praise to the Lord, and I will feel all right. Let's get together.